checking behind me, make sure Manny's all right, and he's there with me. And straight away, in the courtyard, behind the wall, there's this lad on the floor, British soldier, young bloke, blood everywhere. And, you know, literally, his trousers are drenched, absolutely drenched. And I can see blood splatter on the wall, and I can see sort of his eye is closed, and I'm thinking, right, well, okay, he's been shot in the legs. Yeah. And he's fallen over and he's hit his face on there. Okay, let's sort him out. He's still conscious. He's still with us. So, me and Manny start putting tourniquets on his legs. He's been shot a lot of times in his legs, 5 times as it turned out. Mm. So we're tourniqueting up his legs to stop, you know, what is a catastrophic bleed, something that you can die from very, very quickly. And I'm sort of, after I've done that, I sort of hold his hand a bit, and I'm like, you're all right, mate. We're going to sort you out, don't worry. And he sort of says, oh, can you let go of my hand? And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, no worries. And he went, my arms are broken. And I sort of look at his arms, and he's got a gunshot wound through both arms. And I'm looking at his eye, and it's closed completely. And I'm thinking, that's where he's fallen over and hit his eye. He'd been shot through the eye as well. He'd taken 7 rounds. And anyway, so I was thinking, where is everybody else? You know, this is a busy, you know, platoon base, the police station. This is, where is everybody? Where's the reception party? You know, we've got 2 guys on the roof, but maybe they're out on patrol or whatever. I couldn't figure out how this lad had been shot so many times. And so I leave Manny with this soldier, British soldier, and I go around the corner of the police station, and I couldn't believe what was there, to be honest. Mm. I literally stood there, like, aghast. And there was just dead bodies. Just dead bodies.
Fuck.
There were 3 all piled on top of each other. There was another sort of leaning back on the steps, and then there was another guy who was still alive. A lot of injuries to his abs. And I was sort of standing there just looking at it. And then Manny comes around the corner. And he's like, I can't really, would have said something like, sir, boss, you know, what's, and then he just stopped. And I don't know how long we stood there, just going, you know, what on earth is going on? But I remember just snap backed into it. And as callous as it sounds and as callous as it was, I grabbed Manny, like physically grabbed him around the collar and went, listen, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead, he's alive. And I pushed him, like physically, like pushed him to this guy with the ab injuries.
And these are all British soldiers?
All British soldiers.
Yeah.
And all been shot a lot of times at close range. I mean...
Why were they all together?
So, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there, but from what we've been told... They'd come in off patrol, and had all sat down with their backs to the wall, you know, and they'd opened up, you know, lads' mags and brought out the cigarettes, and they were sitting there having a read and a smoke and a laugh, and that's where they were attacked.
Do you know what? I'll tell you something about the war. At the top of our turning, we had a lovely shop, beautiful shop. He was a German, and it was. I used to love to go in there. It was spotless. The war broke out, say, 2 o'clock. He was decamped by 4 o'clock. Never, ever see that man no more. They rounded all the Germans up.
What's your opinion on the Germans after?
I'll tell you something, and this is the gospel truth. I was in Liverpool Street Station, and I've always hated the Germans. because they took away my family. They took away all my loved ones. They took away a lot, you know. And I was in Liverpool Street Station and waiting for the train. And I said to this, anybody sitting here? And he said, no. I went, oh, you're German. And he went to get up and said, no. I said, I've always hated Jewish people, I said, and I realised then, I don't know why, but I realised then he was in the same situation as I was in as a kid, you know. He didn't want to war and lose his mum and dad. And do you know that man? He said, the last time I spoke to a London old lady, she spit in my face. I went, well, I won't spit in your face. And we kissed one another. And you know, he walked away with tears in his eyes.
I bet he did.
He did. And I felt, that was the first time I'd ever felt ashamed of hating somebody. I don't like hate. It's a bad thing. I don't like deceit. I don't like thieving. I don't like, I've never been jealous of nobody because you only hurt yourself. And I've never been a greedy person. I've always shared. And as my mum always taught me, if you can't do good, don't do bad. But that German that day, I sat there and I thought, my God, all them years I've hated them. What a terrible thing. I felt ashamed of myself. I really did.
One person out of each section's medic trained.
So what was you, because that's out of your control. So what was you dealing with regards to that?
One of the instances that happened out there, one of the, which I see as the main cause to my PTSD, to be honest, one of the things I have the worst nightmares about and really gives me the jitters, like, is, so an IED went off one day, a big bang, local to our compound. And then we looked on the cameras and basically all the locals were sort of rushing towards us. We've gone out there to see them and two kids had just been wandering around near where our compound. And at the time they were similar age to my daughters, which are back home in England. And then all the lads, by the time I've got out there, all the lads are running back with one of these kids, the youngest one. And then, so I've gone back out to this seven seater people carrier thing. And there's another kid there. So I've picked him up on my own, running. And then we started treating these kids, basically. One of them's completely in half, the youngest one. And the lad I started dealing with had, like, a lump out of his head. His balls were blown off, basically. He was in bits, do you know what I mean? Like, in real rag. And he was screaming. The youngest one was, like, completely out of his alive. Well, his heart was still going. But was like completely out of it, and the older one was screaming, which is the worst.
The family, you know.
We don't know. Yeah, it's one of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to be honest, in that situation, you're just trying to treat them to keep them alive. Do you know what I mean? We spent a lot of time trying to treat them.
How old were they?
I think one was about 5, and one was about 8 or something.
Mate,
like that.
No wonder you have nightmares.
Oh, right? Yeah, young, do you know what I mean? And basically, we tried treating them and keeping them alive as long as possible with the skills that we knew. And then eventually, a helicopter took them, but we later found out that they died, do you know what I mean? We knew they'd died, do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's just, you can't give up.
How did you get to Italy? Was that on foot through land or was that all over?
Sure, before that, I mean, one of the hardest part of the journey was going through the Mediterranean and, you know, being in a boat full of 120 people, boat designed for 20. And we were in the sea for almost 50 hours and that was terrifying and I was scared. I was really frightened.
50 hours?
50 hours in the sea and we didn't have proper food or water. 3 days and three nights in the jungle and then we didn't have proper food or water in the boat for 3 days and three nights. So we didn't have actually food or water for almost a week. So it was desperate situations. And, you know, when I see people drowning and people dying, that little boy, Alan Kurdi, images like resonates with people.
Yeah.
And so that happens on weekly basis, if not daily. And I could have been one of those people. And that 10,000 people has been killed in Mediterranean in the last 2-3 years. And it just breaks my heart. So anyways, I was lucky and I made it. I survived. A lot of people don't. And so when I made it to Italy, I was on the top of a lorry engine. And actually, this is the first time after being in prison in Greece, and I was almost in prison everywhere I went, you know. I was treated really inhumanely by the authorities in Greece.
Like a criminal?
Yeah, indeed. So I was arrested in Bulgaria, deported back to Turkey, arrested in Turkey in prison, deported back to Iran, and then I had to do it all over again. And so in Greece, after being released from prison, about 2 weeks in prison, we went to a place called Patra. And for the first time in about 9 months, I have heard about my brother from a smuggler, which was great.
Oh, wow.
And and he told me that my brother was heading to the UK. And so actually for the first time, I knew where I needed to go. My destination was kind of, but I didn't know how to get there. And so I had to figure it out. And he helped me to get to Italy on the top of a lorry engine, which was really risky.
On top of a lorry engine?
Literally. Somehow I managed to get in there. It was really small confinement space. And he told me to hold on there and I can come down when the lorry gets into the boat, if it does. And then thankfully, the lorry went to the boat after a few hours. And it was, which was fine in the boat for about 3-4 hours. But then when he went back to the motorway in Italy, it was, the tires were going so fast, the wheels. I thought I will, you know, if I let go of my hands, I will be underneath the tires. So it was really scary situation. And I got the driver's attention a few hours later. And he thought there was some technical issue. So when he came, he was really shocked. So, yeah, I survived deaths on many occasions. And that was perhaps one of them.
Let me word it. There's many people in this country and across Europe that have no sympathy or empathy for anyone that's making any kind of crossing. And they see it as an invasion. And I'm not going to get into the politics about it, but, you know, just hearing then about a young 12-year-old, probably a skinny kid, really, mm-hmm. very scared and running, clinging to the top of an engine. Without getting too political and just being very personal about it, what would you say to those people? And I know many, and
I think it's difficult, but I want people to think, you know, put themselves in our shoes. I mean, why would a mother send their 12 and 13 years old sons away to the unknown? She has to be faced with extraordinary circumstances. I mean, my mother has sacrificed the most out of this. I've not seen her for 12 years, and so much has happened here and there. And so I would like people to think, what if it was happening to them? And really this idea of making it political, it's a humanitarian crisis, and you know, we're all human beings and we have a lot in common. And I think, you know, we all have hopes and dreams and ambitions. And it wasn't my fault. I was not born in Europe.
Yeah.
Where you were born is an accident of birth.
Was you expecting to find him dead?
I don't know what I was expecting. I just thought, I need to get in that car. I need to drive around this little town. And I need to find him. And yeah, I found him and he was just a mess. He is getting help now.
What was the kids? Sorry, just go back to that. What was the kids' like reaction when they found it? Did they express any kind of concern with the
Hi,
asleep?
Daddy. What have you been up to?
Really?
Where have you been?
The innocence of it.
Yeah, they still even now don't have a clue. Do you know, try and keep it as normal as I can for them. But I have said to him, I said, if you're going to do it again, I think it's very selfish, whether you've got problems or whatever. So I've just said, if you're going to do it again, I just want one thing from you. I don't want any letters or anything like that. I want you to sit them both down. And I want you to tell both your children that you're going to go and kill yourself and say bye to them. He just looked at me. Almost like I've just slapped him across the face. Because why should I have to pick up that? Just because his heartache ends doesn't mean that it doesn't. He's going to just transfer the pain onto other people. So if you're man enough to kill yourself, be man enough to sit them down and tell them.